Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to the Robot Industry Podcast. This is the podcast dedicated to advanced manufacturing, capital equipment, and the robotics and automation industry. My name is Jim Beretta, and I am your host. And we have a panel today. This is our first panel. I think this is going to be fun. I'm going to introduce first Matt Schefferle. He's a partner at Automation Marketing, Inc., and they're an Ohio-based technical sales agency offering automation components from leading manufacturers. He's been involved in the industry since 1993. Matt resides in Dublin, Ohio, with his wife and three kids. He holds a Bachelor of Science degree in business from the Ohio State University. And I'm going to also introduce Grant Schefferle. Grant and Matt are brothers, of course. He's also a partner at Automation Marketing, Inc., and they offer the same components from the leading manufacturers. And he's been involved with industrial automation for over 25 years. Grant resides in Rocky River, Ohio, with his wife and two teenage sons. He holds a Bachelor of Science degree in business from The Ohio State University and a Master's of Science degree in engineering from Cleveland State University. I'd also like to introduce Chris Round. Chris is the East Central Regional Manager for Epson Robotics. He has over 25 years marketing and selling globally in the automation, packaging, and SMT industries with a diverse background in conveyors, electronics, and robotics. He is currently on the Robotics Industry of America Marketing Committee. Chris resides in Cincinnati, Ohio with his wife Linda and three kids, all currently in college. Chris graduated with a Bachelor of Science degree from Bowling Green State University. So welcome to the podcast, Matt, Grant, and Chris. I'm really happy to have you. And I have to tell our audience a bit that we have a history. We've known each other for a while. Chris and I go back a few more years, and we're on the same marketing committee for the Robot Industry Association. And I'm excited to have this conversation today. And today's podcast is about robot assembly automation. And we'll be talking about Ohio and Pennsylvania. And what other states do you cover, Matt and Grant, in your business?
Well, we get a little bit into West Virginia as well, Jim. And thanks again for having us today.
I'd also like to introduce Epson Robotics as part of this podcast today. And Chris, I'm going to ask you first, kind of what's going on at Epson? Like, you've got, the other day you and I were talking, and you mentioned to me that you have over 300 models of robots in production.
That's correct. And like Matt said, thanks, Jim, for having us. This is great. You know, Epson's really been making robotics inexpensive and easy to buy these days, with companies beginning to automate, new companies that have maybe never bought before. Now they can afford a robot. We've gotten really, really inexpensive. And actually, the one that we've been selling a lot lately is our T3 for around $7,500 that has a built-in controller and a 110 plug-in. But a big picture for Epson is it's just the ease of use, the integrated options that we have. And so we'll probably talk about many of those in this podcast, but I wanted to just give you an early sense as to what's going on with Epson.
And Matt and Grant, I'd like you to introduce your company a little bit and some of the brands you represent. Obviously, Epson is one of them.
Yeah, so Automation Marketing, as you mentioned, we're a technical sales agency. We cover the entire state of Ohio, the western half of Pennsylvania, and West Virginia for most of our principals. So in addition to Epson, we also get involved in automatic screw driving with Weber, indexing and part handling with Weiss, precision assembly presses with Schmidt, vibratory feeders with Performance, and am I missing any?
Dual strand pallet conveyors with GlideLine.
That's correct.
I've heard of GlideLine before. And we have to laugh a little bit because GlideLine has been a previous client of mine. Chris used to work there. So it's all one kind of happy automation community. So Matt and Grant, I wanted to kind of start off with you a little bit and kind of find out what's happening and what's on your customers' minds a bit.
So we're seeing a lot of first-time customers into automation, bots in particular. And like Chris mentioned, that with the trend being, you know, the costs coming down, the capabilities and ease of use improving, we're seeing a lot of first-time customers. Now, one of the things we're also seeing that comes along with that is they tend to underestimate what all is required when it comes to integrating a robot or integrating a piece of automation. So it's important that We do our job as suppliers to educate these first-time users on what all they're getting involved with. And I like to make the analogy, that we're selling, let's say you're having your kitchen, a major kitchen remodeling project, we're selling the major appliances. So there's a lot, obviously, that needs to be done beyond that. Are you comfortable and capable of handling what's required beyond that? That's a discussion that needs to be had.
Yeah, I was going to say one of the interesting trends that we're seeing too is, as early as 3-5 years ago, primary justification for automation in general was based almost purely on volume, high volume. And what we're seeing time and time again, I know Chris and I have been on several calls lately where they just need to find people and they can't find people. So what they're doing is taking people from an existing process, switching them into different positions within the company where they need people that they can trust, and then implement robots, for those particular tasks, which tend to be pretty low volume tasks that prior to the current state that we're in, they would never have been able to justify, putting robotics into those operations.
No, that's an interesting thing to see where people will spend, where factory owners will spend money just to reduce ergonomic issues. Chris, we've talked a little bit about integrated products. Can you tell us a little bit about the IntelliFlex product from Epson?
Sure. And Grant mentioned a little bit about this, and it's a really neat new product that we're offering. It's basically a feeder and we have the robot, and of course we include our vision. And with the three of those, the great thing is Epson's done the heavy lifting here. And so now the feeder and the vision, they all talk together. It's all totally integrated. And in the past, customers would have to set up the feeder communications, do the feeder tuning, the vision setup, calibration, programming, and set up the programming then, and of course optimize it. And now all customers have to do the heavy lifting that we've done is simply the programming part tuning and then a bit of parts adjustment at the end, and they're ready to go. And it's been very popular. It can accommodate many different sizes, as Grant was also mentioning. And currently right now we've got a 240 and a 530, and we'll be coming out with a couple more options later in the fall. But it's been taking off. In our region here, we've probably sold the most out of to the most different customers in any of the other regions. So for this region here locally, it's been very, very popular.
And again, you're seeing these are small parts. These are high mix environments, medium volume or low volume.
That's correct. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, in the past, bowl feeder would be one type of part, and now, because of the many variations of parts that customers and our builders are having to move, the tray feeder has worked out very good.
Excellent. We talked a little bit about transformation departments and that you're seeing in some of your customers and some of your integrators. Is that something that more and more companies are going to have? Like, do you have a lab as well at your place?
We do. So it's really, it's an extraordinarily valuable tool. So we do, we keep several robots at our distributorship available along with vision and a feeder. And from a testing, feasibility, training standpoint, it's powerful to have that capability, and we're finding a lot of customers are investing in robots for that same purpose. So to be able to have a robot to try something, to get an idea as to whether it might work, maybe get a little bit of a cycle time study done with it is really, or to show their customer, or in our case to show our customer an actual mock-up. That's extremely valuable.
And go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Jim, these customers need feedback quickly. That's the other challenge that we have. So by having these resources locally, we can get feedback to these customers a lot faster than if we have to go back to corporate, which is where everything is coming in from North America. So it's a tremendous asset to have.
We talked a little bit about the value of training and kind of retraining, and it kind of goes with the whole, some of the customers may be new and not used to automation. What are some of your thoughts on that?
From our experience, we find, unfortunately, that a lot of customers seem to acknowledge, at least initially, the value of training, but they're almost kind of paying lip service to it. So it's really important to actually invest in the time and the cost of training. And there does seem to be a little bit of reluctancy on behalf of the customer in some cases to make that commitment. And you know, really what I like to say is there's kind of a three times multiplier effect when it comes to training versus the time you're going to spend had you not attended training. And what I mean by that is, if training is a week long, in an Epson's case, if you want to be trained on the programming plus the vision, it's 5 days, so a week. I say if you choose not to attend that training, you're going to spend three times the amount of time toiling with the man through the manual, taking calls and emails to support. And again, we're happy to support from that standpoint. But the problem with that is oftentimes the customer becomes frustrated and they have a negative user experience as a result, really no fault of the suppliers. But that's what we see with training. It's really important, and it's, you know, and maybe we need to do a better job, and I'm sure, you know, that to in explaining or in, you know, pleading, I guess, the customers the value of the training, because really oftentimes they don't realize it until it's too late.
It's a tremendous drain on resources for both sides is really what it boils down to. Just to kind of tag along on what Grant was saying there, the amount of time that we have to spend with internal resources at Epson, and then the customer has to expend a lot of resources on their end as well. And then a lot of frustration comes about, and it can kind of turn into you know, a bad situation sometimes as well.
So it's almost like a plant manager or a project manager needs to put, you know, when they put the budget together for the equipment and they put the commissioning in as a cost, then they go, hey, year two and year three and year four, we need to make sure that we always are investing in training, because people leave and things happen, and you just need to make sure that you have your shift one and shift two and shift three all covered.
That's
without
correct.
A doubt. And I think part of the challenge too, though, it goes back to the fact that a lot of these guys are spread really thin, and they're vital to the day-to-day operations at these factories. So getting them out of the plant for a few days for training can be a challenge. And we understand that. So, I mean, that's why, you know, we'll work with customers however we have to deliver that training. But really, ideally, we want to provide them with the most comprehensive training that we can. And in the end, that's going to make everybody's life a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. I think having a customer who knows a lot about their products and processes and the software and such is probably your best customer. Say, let's talk a little bit about some of the unique applications of robots that you're seeing in your area.
Sure. So we have a very diverse product mix here in Ohio. I think traditionally, you know, we're thought of as heavy automotive, which we still are. We, you know, Honda, of course, has major operations here, as well as a lot of the other major automotive companies. But we do a tremendous amount of work in the medical device industry. We also do a tremendous amount of work with a lot of consumer product companies that reside here in Ohio. And then I would say the fourth segment that probably provides the largest mix for us is just, you know, more or less independent private manufacturers.
Yeah, but just to piggyback on that, we have in Ohio, in particular, and Western Pennsylvania, we have a broad range of product types being assembled, but the applications themselves, interestingly enough, the majority of the applications for robots involve picking and placing, whether that be picking from, you know, again, a flex feeder and loading an assembly machine, or loading and unloading a CNC machine or a plastic injection molding machine or a testing machine. The vast majority of the applications are pick and place. And these robots are very well suited for that application. not that doesn't limit us to that application. Certainly, we get involved in dispensing and a lot of different applications, but by and large, pick and place applications rule the day.
Very cool. So we kind of touched on a little bit of proof of principle. Have we beaten that to death, or do you want to talk about it?
No, I think we can expand on that. I think it's very valuable for a customer, obviously, to mitigate their risk, especially if we're talking about a systems integrator or a machine builder. They're creating a unique product every time, you know, and it's very challenging. So whatever they can do up front to reduce their exposure is of great benefit. So we talked about the labs, but one of the challenges with the lab is there's a lot of different robots. The range of robots, and we talked about this with Epson, there's over 300 different SCARA robot models alone. So how can you populate your lab? You know, so you can see where I'm going with that. So what's an alternative? Well, simulators. So like vision, simulators have come a long way. What you can accomplish with a simulator now is really amazing. So you can have a simulator bring in any robot that the supplier sells. You can write a program. You can bring in CAD data to build up your entire machine. You can do feasibility, cycle time, collision avoidance, all before you even purchase a robot. And really, the value of that is, you know, you can bring in different robots. Okay, bring in robot A that might be a little less expensive. Does it do the job? Not quite. Okay, let's bring in the next model up. Okay, we're fine. We got our safety margin. We know with a high degree of confidence that robot's going to do the job, and we can do an animation and email it to our customer.
And that mitigation of risk, of course, works both sides, right? It works it for the customer, it works it for the who's a manufacturer, and also for the customer themselves. They reduce the risk, and the price gets reduced for the integration. Let's talk about proof of principles, what it is, and why this is important to reduce risk.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's their customer. Again, if we're talking about, and in a lot of cases, it's the machine builder who's getting the most use out of the simulator. So, but I mean, their customer is more comfortable. They're more comfortable. You know, we're happier. It's a win all around. So that we're seeing a lot of more simulator use. And simulators, different companies treat simulators different. Some offer it free. In Epson's case, it's free, included with the software. Some companies, most companies actually charge a pretty good price for the simulator. Because again, it is a powerful tool.
Let's talk a little bit about client successful applications. So, you know, with automation, you don't want to try to boil the ocean.
Yeah, I think everybody has the level of capabilities in our industry is all over the place, Jim, both from a system integration standpoint and an end user perspective. So really one of the key things for us when we first go in and visit one of these customers, it's really important for us to determine what their level of expertise is, because as Grant had indicated before, you know, a lot of these applications are basic pick and place applications, but a lot of them require machine vision. And if a customer doesn't have experience with vision guidance and it's a first time application, it can be real challenging.
Yeah, Jim, I like to say, you know, climb the ladder of complexity. And what I mean by that is start off with an application where the risk is relatively low and it's achievable. You know, I mean, you'll look good because that being the customer, and then from there they can build on that. But there, you know, from time to time I find customers that really they dive right in, and the complexity is, you know, they bite off a little more than they can chew. So really, ideally, start off with a project or an application that is relatively straightforward, that you can cut your teeth on and grow and gain experience. And then the next project, you know, work your way up that ladder.
And that's a good segue into the next question I had is about pre-integrated automation solutions. So, you know, we see the benefit of it, but there's also the other side. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, again, you know, we're talking about so to make the distinction between integrated and turnkey. And I think that with new customers, inexperienced customers, it's very important to make that distinction. And what I mean by that is integrated features or integrated options are a tool to make your life easier, okay, to save you time, to reduce complexity, but they're not turnkey. In other words, you're getting something in and the project is yours. You know, the onus is on you to work with your supplier, to get the proper training, to learn what you need to know. And, you know, ultimately the success of the project is on your shoulders. Now, one example I often use is with vision. New customers often overlook the importance of lighting. And lighting makes or breaks a vision application oftentimes. And there's a lot of different lighting techniques and lighting sources. And, you know, again, it's important to take the time and do your due diligence to understand that. I've had first-time customers, vision-guided application, no lighting technique at all. And now you're vulnerable to ambient lighting. A light goes out in the plant or a light starts to dim on the floor and it could throw off your entire application. So that's an example. It's important to understand integration or integrated versus turnkey. Yeah. So we're making, you know, robot companies in general, integrated options, vision guidance, force guidance, parts feeding. We're doing a lot to make your life easier, but your job is to take what we're giving you and make it turnkey.
So the business of supplying automation devices has changed. What has changed for you in the last few years?
Well, I would say, you know, definitely more support. And a lot of that goes hand in hand with all the new customers. We're getting a lot of small to medium-sized companies, brand new to automation, and they're new to automation because now you can get a robot for $7,500. And now that opens up a whole new world of opportunities for them, which is great. But again, it goes back to the training end of things. You know, these small companies they're less likely to have the resources to send somebody to training. And I often tell people that it's not unusual for me to be working with a maintenance guy to integrate a robot, you know, because the owner of the company said, hey, this is easy to use. So, you know, it's up to you, integrate this robot. And obviously he's a maintenance guy. He can't disappear for a week. But now they're going to lean more on the supplier. And really that's where a good distributor can be very beneficial, to work with that company in that case where we need to be there to kind of, you know, again, arm in arm with them. It is a drain on resources from our standpoint. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. But it's, you know, in that case, in that particular example, there's really, you know, we're not going to leave a customer hanging. But it's, we're going to provide the support regardless. But
yeah,
it's not ideal. It's not ideal.
Yeah. And just to follow up on that a little bit, there's a tremendous amount of businesses out there still, Jim, that have not implemented robotics yet. I mean, a lot of people would be surprised as long as robots have been out there. So we find ourselves dealing a lot these days with mom and pop shops. And as Grant referred to a little bit ago, when you deal with these companies, they don't have the infrastructure that some of the larger traditional corporations, you know, have to handle these projects. So there is a lot of hand holding that goes on.
This question is for Chris. Chris, you obviously work with Matt and Grant a lot. So how does the whole conversation start? Do you get a call or you get an inquiry from a customer, and you and Grant, you might take Matt, you might take Grant out to the customer?
We look at each opportunity that comes through a few different ways. You know, for our team here, it usually starts with geography. We start to look at the project itself to see if we can get a sense, is a systems integrator going to be an important part of it. But much of what we just discussed in your last question, that really shows the value of where our partner integrators really come into play, and they play an amazing role. And so then we can determine, you know, the if an integrator would be required. Of course, we're looking at the actual project still and the market itself, and of course the size of the project. So we're looking at, because we have different partners that we work with that may entertain $1 million projects or higher versus maybe even some as small as $50,000, you know, with maybe just a simple robot and some vision, whatever, that may be a totally different builder. So we kind of just look at it that way. We generally meet on a weekly basis at the end of the week and just kind of talk about the week and talk about setting up the next week and see what we have, see what we've gone through. But we generally look at it that way. And then we just kind of all attack the next week as it unfolds for us.
Well, it's been very interesting to kind of get an upbeat. I'm calling this episode the Feet on the Street episode. Matt and Grant, did we miss anything? Is there anything else we'd like to talk about?
I think, Jim, you've done a great job of touching on a lot of the different areas. I would say it's just a great time to be selling robots, supporting robots, and buying robots. There's lower cost options. There's more options just in general, and greater capabilities. So it's an exciting time.
It's going to be interesting to see coming out of this whole COVID situation too, how things are going to develop. You know, my feeling is just talking to customers, machine builders, and end users that the emphasis is going to be on more automation than ever before.
Well, with Matt. Epson has done an amazing job of trying to make this complexity less complex, if you will. You know, we're trying to take this, you know, even our software, which is it's just been created in a way that allows customers to be able to approach it in a comfortable way. I mean, that's something that is going to be very helpful as we start to have even more and more people begin automation projects for the first time.
Yeah, that really is the goal, and the challenge is to improve ease of use without reducing capability. Because oftentimes you have a trade-off. You can't, when you try to make something too easy, you lose capability. And I know that frustrates a lot of engineers. So it's important. And again, it's a challenge. And Epson has done a tremendous job in making their product easy to use, yet retaining the power and the capability of the system. And again, that is the challenge.
And I wanted to thank you, all three of you, for showing up today. Matt, Grant, and Chris, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to chat with our audience. Matt and Grant, how can people get in touch with you?
You can reach us by email at info@automationmarketinginc.com, or you can reach us by phone at area code 800-482-6880.
And Chris Round, how do people get a hold of you?
Well, of course, I can be found on the Epson website. But you know, if they want to give me a call, they can call me at 513-550-2820. As well as chris.round@ea.epson.com is my email. That's probably the best way to get a hold of me, quickest.
I would like to thank and acknowledge our partner, A3, the Association for Advancing Automation. A3 is the umbrella association for the RIA, AIA, MCMA, and A3 Mexico. These four associations combined represent almost 1,300 automation manufacturers, component suppliers, systems integrators, end users, research groups, and consulting firms throughout the world that are driving automation forward. I'd also like to thank and recognize our partner, Painted Robot. Painted Robot builds and integrates digital solutions. They're a web development firm that offers SEO and digital social marketing and can set up and connect CRM and other ERP tools to unify marketing, sales, and operations. As web and digital is changing, Painted Robot is helping advanced manufacturers stay modern and competitive in the space. You can find Painted Robot at paintedrobot.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us at the Robot Industry Podcast, our email address is therobotindustrypodcast@gmail.com, or you can find me, Jim Beretta, on LinkedIn. If you have an idea, an interesting company or technology, or would like to be a guest or nominate someone to be a guest, please send me an email. We'll see you next time, and thanks for listening. Be safe out there. Today's podcast was produced by Customer Traction, and I'd like to thank my nephew, Chris Gray, for the music, Chris Colvin for the audio production, my partner, Janet, and our sponsors, A3 and Painted Robot.